Call the answer line where you're the head honcho, the big cheese, top dog, big man, mighty boss. And you can tell us exactly where to go.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online. Just about to push the button on another program from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
From the west coast of Europe, Radio Netherlands researches the facts.
You're listening to Media Network.
Good day, good evening, or goodbye, depending on when you're hearing this, live or on tape, and if you want to hear half an hour of news from the world of broadcasting. No apologies for a bit of nostalgia that will creep into the programme over the next few weeks. Next month, this wireless show is 10 years old, and as we reach that milestone, we're reviewing the directions we want to take the programme in the future, based on audience research that we've done, and the avalanche of letters and calls that seem to be on the increase as the weather warms up here in the Netherlands. A whole stream of calls started last Friday evening to Hilversum 724222. This was the first.
Hello, Jonathan. Graham Stevenson, phoning from Dunblane in central Scotland. Since 2000 hours Friday evening, I've been listening to a rather strange programme coming in on 6205 kHz up in the 49 metre band. Non-stop music, no IDs, no jingles, nothing. One record that keeps cropping up is Christa Berg's Lady in Red, and I was wondering if this programme could perhaps be a test transmission from Radio Caroline out in the Roche Revenge. Or maybe that's just wishful thinking on my part.
Yes, it is, I'm afraid. A few days later, the calls had a name to report, like this one from round the corner.
Hello, Jonathan. This is Julius Hermans from Vleuten Holland. Since last Friday, I hear non-stop pop music on 6205, and last night I got an identification, and it turned out to be Radio Fex. You might remember this station broadcasted for a while in 1988, also 24 hours a day with lots of media information, and they seem to be back on the air, and they're broadcasting 24 hours on 6205, and their address mentioned is the same as in 1988. It's Surrey Electronics, The Forge, Cranley, Surrey, in England. And the telephone number in England is 0483 and then 275997.
So, let's pick up the phone and dial that number. Trevor Brooke is the manager of Surrey Electronics in Cranley. He's also the head of Radio Fax. And so if we're getting all these calls to our little wireless station about his operation, what's going on?
Well, we are going to come back on the air 2 years and 4 months after we closed down at the end of 1988. We've been testing and installing the equipment.
Okay.
The programs will start in about a week and a half's time.
Can you tell me where?
Well, as before, we don't actually like to say on air which country we're coming from. The state involved knows perfectly well who we are. We've been applying for a licence there for many years. We don't want to create an embarrassment for them by making a big public issue of it.
So at the moment you're sort of what, in terms of legal status? Are you an illegal operation?
Well, we've taken advice and we believe that we are operating completely legally. We closed at the end of 1988 because legislation appeared to mean that we couldn't continue to operate. And in the intervening time, it has become clear that we are, because of the fact that we were there before the 31st of December 1988, we are entitled to continue operations.
Trevor, what about the schedule? I mean, obviously you're on the air, but what frequencies and what times?
Right, well, we're on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, on two frequencies. We're on 6205, as we were before, and we're also now on 12255. Now, the 6205 can be heard in America during the middle of the night, but not particularly well. So this time we've added a higher frequency, which should provide a much more satisfactory signal to the English-speaking countries over there that seem to be very interested in what we're doing.
I'm with you. So that's both those channels running 24 hours a day. And what sort of power?
The 6205 is, as before, it's 230 watts of RF into an aerial that gives 4.5 dB gain, and the 12 megahertz system is running an ERP of about 250 watts.
So, final question, why?
Why? Because we would eventually like a license to transmit in England. But in the meantime, while we can't, we can legally, under UK legislation, we can operate everything but the transmitter.
Trevor Brook of Radio Facts there, and lots of clues in that conversation as to which country Trevor was alluding to. Thanks to Friday Okoloza from Bauchi State, Nigeria, for making a special effort to call the answer line with his condolences on hearing of the death of our contributor Richard Jinby. Friday, we're having difficulty calling you back, but expect to hear from us soon. Paul Campbell in Manchester, England, and John Crone in Australia both forward a report from the UK newspaper The Sunday Telegraph, which stated last Sunday that the BBC has decided to close its Hong Kong relay station in 1997 when the territory returns to the People's Republic of China. China's made it clear that the BBC would only be allowed to maintain the transmitter if it refrained from broadcasting controversial material. That's unacceptable to the BBC, and an alternative site in northern Thailand is one of the options under consideration now. Radio France International is just about to start a separate service specially aimed for sub-Saharan Africa. It's called RFI Plus Africa, and it'll be broadcast daily from 05 to 08 hours UTC. All RFI frequencies will carry it for the time being, however, so that RFI can provide listeners in the region with a choice between mainstream RFI in French and RFI Plus Africa, also in French. New frequencies will shortly be activated from relay facilities in Gabon and French Guiana. It seems that RFI has also contacted several East European countries in the hope of hiring airtime on their shortwave transmitters for the new service. RFI is currently going through a transmitter rebuilding and expansion program, both at home and abroad, whereas countries such as Czechoslovakia, Hungary and the Soviet Union are not fully utilizing what they've already got. And that's because of financial cutbacks.
Media Networks Global Roadshow.
Now to Prague, Czechoslovakia, recently the scene of an extraordinary conference. Any listener to shortwave knows that much of the chaos on the international shortwave broadcast bands is caused by the fact that each country picks its own spot on the dial, with little regard for who else is broadcasting. That's not strictly true. Radio Netherlands, BBC, Deutsche Welle, Radio Canada International, The Voice of America and Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, do sit down several times a year to try to avoid frequency clashes in forthcoming schedules. And Peter Skala from Radio Prague's frequency office in Czechoslovakia explained to me that there is some sort of coordination in the eastern part of the continent as well.
Yes, the so-called socialist countries also did their own coordination of frequencies since about the beginning of the 1960s.
Was it easy for all these stations to coordinate their frequency?
I think it is very difficult to coordinate frequencies on short waves at all, because as our listeners surely know, shortwave bands are completely overcrowded. And even if we coordinated frequencies only in a group of several countries, we were sometimes completely unable to avoid mutual interference.
Now, about 10 years ago, most shortwave broadcasters changed their frequencies four times a year to match the seasons. The International Frequency Registration Board in Geneva coordinated four frequency plans. But with so much of the world's international broadcasting concentrated between East and Western Europe, some broadcasters decided that two annual changes were enough, as Jan-Willem Drexhager, who heads Radio Netherlands Frequency Bureau, now explains.
Yes, most of the organizations change it during the clock time changes because they want to arrive in the target areas at the same time during summer and winter. I mean the same local time in the target areas.
But there are other countries around the world, in fact, still, I guess, a majority of countries that are sticking to the ITU schedules, which are changes every quarter and on the first Sunday of the respective months. For example, the first Sunday in May would be the next change that they would make. Why are they continuing with that?
Well, there is also an advantage of changing more often as far as propagation is concerned. For some requirements, it's necessary to change your frequency to optimally reach a target area. There are advantages and disadvantages for both ways. We think it's the best to use only two periods, only summer and winter, which guarantees much more clean frequencies than in the other methods, that you have to take care of four different schedules and then also changes during those schedules because of clock time changes.
Now, the coordination that went on in Prague, I mean, that was pretty late, wasn't it, bearing in mind that these changes are going to happen in May, and also presumably each of these radio stations has to print program schedules.
Yes, that's right. That's why we try the next coordination meeting to coordinate it a bit earlier already. The next meeting will probably be held in Romania in the end of August already.
Now, can you give me some idea of just how big the problems are facing the frequency engineers sitting around the table?
Well, there was made a list of incompatibilities. So all co-channel and adjacent channel problems were identified beforehand. And it appeared that there were a number of 1,300 incompatibilities.
So these are major problems, interference problems.
Yes, that's right. Imagine you have to talk in 3 to 4 days about all those 1,300 problems. That would almost be impossible. And so we decided for this first time to concentrate only on the most urgent ones, and that are, of course, the co-channel problems.
Peter Scala is probably the man who should get the full credit for getting Eastern and Western broadcasters around one table. As a lifelong shortwave listener, he's concerned about the future of the medium. In the past, the USSR only coordinated shortwave frequencies it used for external broadcasting, some 50,000 frequency hours a year. But Peter hopes that one day they'll coordinate the large number of channels used for domestic broadcasting in the Soviet Union.
Yes, that's right. We coordinated the Soviet frequencies for external broadcasting, but the internal broadcasting was not coordinated. So we had instances of interference between Radio Prague frequencies and those of internal services of the Soviet Union.
So what happens now? I mean, obviously, Eastern Europe has gone through a dramatic change. Does that mean to say that, for example, the OIRT will disappear, or do you see a new role for it?
I think that eventually OIRT will disappear, or the blocks of broadcasters in Europe will disappear. Actually, we in Czechoslovakia suggested on the conference of former socialist countries that we should coordinate frequencies, at least on a regional basis in Europe, between Eastern and Western broadcasters. And I'm glad to say that a couple of weeks ago we had a meeting which could be described as an initial meeting in this process.
Of course, it's a start, and each of us has to work on improvements. But while we will be doing this, maybe for a couple of times, the number of incompatibilities will hopefully become lower, and so we will also be able to discuss about the adjacent channel problems in the future.
The initial period of this process, which we in a way initiated will be very difficult. First, we shall realize that there are simply too many frequencies, too much power, and that we have to do something about it, to do some mutual reductions and things like that.
Peter Scala hopes that more domestic services will decide to broadcast material from abroad, such as the case of the BBC and Radio Free Europe, whose programmes are now heard domestically in Czechoslovakia on FM and medium wave respectively.
Yes, that's exactly the thing I would like eventually to see, not only in Czechoslovakia, but also in other countries. That would very much alleviate the problems of the overload of the shortwave channels, and shortwave radio would be a much more pleasant medium in the years to come.
As changes have taken place in Eastern Europe towards a market economy, there is a problem, obviously, with money, isn't there? I mean, things are going to get worse before they get better. Do you think that will affect external broadcasting and the power that they have, the finances?
Well, it has already influenced services, at least in Czechoslovakia, as you probably know. We have reduced the engineering potential of Radio Prague by about half. So this inevitably be the outcome of these changes. But on the whole, I believe that broadcasting and external broadcasting as such has its place in the Eastern countries as well.
Finally, on the more positive side, as the eastern part of Europe has opened up, we've now found out more about the exact location of transmitter sites. Take Radio Prague, for instance.
Well, we have three transmitter sites. One is at Litomyšl, where we employ two 100 kilowatt transmitters. Then there is, this is in northeast Bohemia. There is another site in at Veľké Kostolany in western Slovakia. There we have one 100 kilowatt transmitter. And then there is a relatively new site, or at least the equipment of this site has been improved and modernized back in 1984, and it is located at near Rimavská Sobota with two 250 kilowatt transmitters.
Rather long way from Prague, though.
It is, and we had in the past serious difficulties with landlines between Prague, between the studios, our studios in Prague, and this quite remote site.
Back in the days of the Iron Curtain, one of the reasons for putting the transmitters in the eastern part of the country was the fear of an invasion from the west by NATO forces. Today, though, despite the distance between the studio and the transmitter, there is a reception advantage.
Under these circumstances, when we broadcast from eastern Slovakia, we get good results, say on 6 megahertz in Western Europe. So that's also an advantage of this situation.
Back in 1927, Holland started international broadcasting from the Deep South.
This is station PCJ.
The Deep South of Holland, that is. More than 60 years later, we think we've got the formula about right. Small country, big heart. Public radio, direct from Europe.
Last week, we mentioned the single sideband tests taking place in Cuba. Radio Havana, Cuba, heard that mention too.
Jonathan, it's a pleasure to be able to participate in your very famous and popular media network program, of which I must say I am an avid listener. And Radio Havana, Cuba will finally test its single sideband capability in the next few days. This is Arnie Coro, the host of Radio Havana, Cuba's DXS Unlimited, saying goodbye.
Now, it seems those tests are not taking place daily. There have been phone calls to our answer line with the exact details of when the next one's expected.
Hello, Jonathan. Tony Barrett from Newton Abbott in southwest England. Next official test will be on 5965 kilohertz. This coming Sunday, between 04 and 06 hours UTC, but it didn't say which sideband it would be.
It'll be upper sideband. Eric Coyer in Holter, Denmark, reminds us that Radio Norway International has been using compatible single sideband for all its transmissions above 15 megahertz and all that for some time. You can check on a single sideband receiver because the lower sideband will be missing.
To the other end of the world, if you like listening to New Zealand, I've been finding very good signals coming from New Zealand on 17770 around 6 hours Greenwich Mean Time over the last couple of weeks.
Thanks for the observation. Now, what about that earthquake in Central America 4 days ago? Just before we came on the air, I called James Latham, who's station manager at Radio for Peace International, a small but active shortwave station in Costa Rica. And I asked James whether the earthquake had caused problems at the station.
Jonathan, at the time our radio announcer had was announcing between programs, and it shook up the station quite a bit. It was somewhat strong here, not as strong, of course, as the center of the earthquake, which was in Limon. But the announcer had mentioned on the air that we had a earthquake, and that we were going to continue broadcasting. And about 4 or 5 seconds later, we lost our power at the station, and we don't have a backup generator. So when that occurred, we were off the air.
The power came back several times, but on each occasion for a short period only. Normal operations resumed on Tuesday. In fact, though, repairs are still going on after an earthquake which struck at the end of last year.
December 22nd, as a matter of fact, and we are still in provisional location right now, in a provisional office and studios. It's very compact here. We don't have very much room and flexibility. We have currently just a small single studio that is our control room, production room, etc., etc. And this is in the midst of our office, so everything is very, very cramped. Some of the funds we had for a larger transmitter, we were going to upgrade the facility, unfortunately had to go into upgrading our studios, and also we built a new transmitting building. Currently we're running a 5-kilowatt transmitter and two 2.5-kilowatt transmitters.
And bearing in mind the power, that's amazing. On April 22nd, Radio for Peace International experimented with narrowband FM broadcasts to see what listeners in North and Central America thought about it. They're still waiting for reaction to evaluate the results. Their schedule has changed slightly. 13630 and 15030 kilohertz both run 24 hours a day in AM. And between 20 hours and midnight 30 UTC, their third transmitter uses 21460 kilohertz, 21460 from 20 hours to midnight 30, and then from midnight 30 onwards they move down to 7375 kilohertz, 7375, and note that both 7375 and 21460 are in single sideband from Monday to Friday and AM at weekends. 21460 is fairly clear here in Holland at around 2030 UTC.
The Stanley Foundation is a non-profit, non-partisan organization that works for international understanding by providing a forum for diverse viewpoints.
So why is Radio for Peace International doing the single sideband test?
For us, it was a way that we could get a better signal into Europe. A lot of our European listeners were complaining the AM was being interfered with, and we're sort of cramped in there on the 41-meter band as far as space goes. So we decided to try 41 meters on sideband to see if one of the shortwave bands in that spectrum would work well, and our response has been very favorable. We primarily get fours and fives with that. So we'll continue. Our plan here is to go both with sideband and AM in the future.
I've got you. And in terms of your operation at the moment, you're running, what, about 17 hours a day during the week?
We've actually increased it to 24 hours now. Currently 4.5 hours of original programming, and of course it's repeated throughout the day and night.
That was James Latham on the line from Costa Rica. Lou Josephs in Boston called in earlier today with a report on how the earthquake affected other Costa Rican shortwave stations. It seems it didn't.
Every single one of the Costa Rican shortwave stations that's listed in the handbook I have just now logged, including the one on 5953.5. So that's all of them. In the meantime, on 15350 right now, this is like full volume, and full up from Luxembourg, every light is lit here. It sounds like listening to a local AM.
Whoops, time's up.
Media Networks News Review.
Victor Gunatilaka is back on the wireless now as we bring up the line to Colombo, Sri Lanka. Victor, we were talking earlier about that Prague frequency meeting. Do you notice any reduction in the shortwave congestion yet?
Well, I just really couldn't say definitely, but of course since the jamming disappeared from the bands, reception has been quite easy and listening has been a pleasure.
Okay, what have you been hearing?
Well, we have been still looking at the Middle East, and I have been getting quite good reception from the voice of the Iranian Communist Party, and this is heard on 3895 kilohertz. That's 3895 kilohertz, 18 hours to sign off at 19 hours UTC. Reception is quite good, and the transmitters are believed to be in Afghanistan.
Good gracious. What about Radio Baghdad?
Well, Radio Baghdad is still continuing on 3980-4600 and providing fair reception despite the jammers. And the frequency we mentioned recently, 7350, continues with the Kurdish service. And sign-off has been noted at 2030 UTC.
What about other languages?
Well, still, we can't hear any other language other than Kurdish, but I think listeners should be careful. There's Radio Beijing on the same frequency, and at 18:30, we hear a weak French language broadcast from Radio Beijing on the same frequency.
So that French is coming from Beijing and not Baghdad.
Yeah.
Now down to East Africa.
Well, yes, sir. Since we started hearing reports of the deteriorating situation in Ethiopia, we have been watching the Voice of Ethiopia in Addis Ababa. Although the rebels are supposed to be just 100 kilometers from the capital city, we still have very reliable reception, 1500 to 1600 UTC English from the Voice of Ethiopia. And the two frequencies to look for them, 7165 and 9560 kilohertz.
What about Deutsche Welle's relay station in Sri Lanka? Is that now really back to normal, back to 100%?
Well, yes, Jonathan, at last, Deutsche Welle seems to be having a full schedule from its Trincomalee station, and we have English and Bengali to South Asia in the mornings as well now, and that's 0130 to 0250 UTC, and the frequencies, medium wave 1548 kilohertz, and short wave 9615 and 11945. So the Deutsche Welle has a full schedule from its Trincomalee relay station, and according to the engineers there, they're quite happy with the progress.
Around about the same time in the mornings, you're also hearing Tashkent as well.
Well, that's right. According to a report just coming from Asanta Sirimana here in Colombo, Radio Tashkent has introduced a new English transmission, 01R to 130 UTC, that's 01 to 0130 UTC, on two frequencies, 7335 and 7190 should propagate to North America.
Well, thank you, Victor. Now, that's all for this time. Media Network's roadshow feature will come from Austria in 7 days' time, I promise. In the meantime, from the team in Hilversum and around the world, we all wish you a pleasant weekend.
Input on our output in this anniversary year to Media Network, Box 222, Hilversum, the Netherlands, or fax the facts to 31 35 724 352.
Copyright 1991.
Some stations talk to the world. Radio Netherlands talks to people.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website.
This is Media Network with Jonathan Marks,
where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.
I regret to inform you this recording is now officially over.